Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 320 for Friday, September 19th, 2014. Greetings from downtown Denver, Colorado. I arrived here from New York City Wednesday night, September 17th, just as the media embargo was lifted on information announced by Amazon that day in briefings for journalists about six new devices, four tablets and two e-readers. I began the day at 5 a.m. in Cambridge and finished my coverage 13 hours later here at our home in Denver. So for this special episode of the podcast, I thought I would just take you with me to experience what transpired on that day, September 17th, as a way to introduce you to the new products and perhaps gain some insight into how Amazon has evolved during these six-plus years that I have been talking with you about ebooks, the Kindle, and the company that keeps reinventing normal. We'll begin before dark in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where I set my Fire Phone's alarm to 4:30 a.m., but I woke up wide awake well before then at about 3:45. This gave me time to check email and jump on a chance to order a Moto 360 smartwatch from Motorola because I'm fascinated by this new product line and thought it might be fun to experiment with the Moto 360 while the world waits for the arrival of the Apple Watch early next year. I also had time by getting up that early to practice my new Yamaha guitar for 20 minutes. That's a daily discipline that I've kept to ever since receiving the handsome instrument as a gift on my birthday, August 30th. And I'm well on my way toward learning When I'm 64, the Beatles song, using video tutorials, and I hope I'll get finished sometime before I turn 65 next summer. Since the subway didn't start running until 5:30 a.m., I used the recently added Uber app on my Fire Phone to summon a car for the ride to Boston South Station. The Acela left promptly on time at 6:05, and I scored a seat on the left side of the quiet car. That meant that I enjoyed great views of the ocean during 4 hours of blessed quiet, especially as it passes through Rhode Island and Connecticut. I can't tell you how restful it was to spend that much time traveling with that many people and that much silence. The Amtrak conductor, it turned out, did double duty as a polite but stern librarian, in addition to checking everybody's tickets. And she at one point suggested that the couple in front of me might want to move to another car because they were whispering too loudly. I think I heard one cell phone ring the whole trip. Everyone else's was set to stun. And if someone got a call, they scurried down the aisle to the space between the cars to talk. I had to make one call myself out there, close enough to the next car, the rest of the train, which are all unquiet cars, and it looked like kind of a cartoon version of Bedlam, people talking too loud on phones and to each other and gesturing as if the end of the world was at hand. The Acela arrived exactly on time at 9:45 a.m. at Penn Station. That gave me plenty of time for a sunny 20-minute stroll from Penn Station to 415 West 15th Street. That was the site of a multi-purpose venue named Milk Studios. That's also where I attended the Fire TV launch in April. And last week, the Reuters photographer told me, who I met there, Milk was the site of numerous shoots for Fashion Week. It's a pretty arty space with high ceilings and all kinds of different settings that you can set up media events for. The Outcast agency, which is hired by Amazon to coordinate the product demos, had friendly staffers waiting to sign us in and provide us with clip-on name tags. And at about 11, we were escorted to a large elevator for the ride to the penthouse level, leading to a beautiful outdoor patio overlooking the Hudson River in the distance. There were buffet tables with coffee, Coke, sticky buns, and other treats set to the side of the patio. Dave Limp, Senior Vice President of Amazon Devices, convened us with information on how the two-hour session would work, and he also provided an overview of what has been a very busy year in the world of Amazon devices. Back when Limp joined Amazon about 5 years ago, one product launch a year was the norm, and in those days, if there was a new product, you were probably going to see Jeff Bezos himself take the stage to hold it aloft and proclaim each year, "Customers are going to love this." These days, the announcement of five new hardware devices is not exactly chopped liver, and Jeff, the day before, had been tied up at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., showing off a model of his Blue Origin company's rocket engine, which has been chosen for development by a joint venture of Boeing and Lockheed Martin. I actually kind of love the coincidence that Bezos was appearing beside his BE-4 rocket engine model the day before these new devices were unveiled. I think a lot of people have tried to understand what makes Jeff Bezos tick, and many have mentioned his ability to focus on a long time horizon and not get distracted by short-term obstacles like, for example, negotiations with a single book publisher. Asked about his overarching goal for Blue Horizon, which has up till now generally been regarded as pretty much of a hobby for the Amazon CEO, Bezos replied, "What we want to have happen is millions of people living and working in space." So, how's that for a visionary goal with a long timeline? Dave Limp, I believe, reports directly to Bezos, along with Senior Vice President of Kindle Content, Russ Grandinetti, so the New York City briefing was adequately staffed at a high level. Limp pointed out that instead of one device introduced this year, Amazon has already released Fire TV, Fire Phone, including separate releases in the U.S. and Europe, and now these new tablets and readers. The name tag I had a green dot on it, and that meant that when we left the patio in small groups, I followed Beatrice Courant, who was transferred now from Paris to Amazon's U.S. operation. She turns out to be, she was the PR aide who helped me set up my interview with Amazon's director in France when Darlene and I were there in May, so it was fun to see her again. Andy Anatko of the Chicago Sun-Times and journalists from USA Today and Slate were among those sitting in a square configuration of couches to hear Dave Limp introduce the seventh generation of Kindles. There were two other groups that were having separate sessions. This is when we broke into the small groups. So Dave started out by handing a brand new Kindle Voyage to each of us, and that led to a moment that I love in covering tech news. It's the moment of the first impression, the first touch, the grokking of a new device. There was plenty of time afterward to study specs and learn that the Voyage has a resolution of 300 pixels per inch, a visible improvement from the Paperwhite's 212 ppi, and that the Voyage weighs a full ounce less than the Paperwhite and measures 7.6 millimeters compared with 9.1 millimeters for the Paperwhite. As I received one of the Voyage devices from Dave Limp, the right side of my brain was providing a different level of analysis than these numbers. It translated roughly into, "Oh my God, I've got to have one of these things." The high resolution and dimensions may explain most of that effect, but the micro-etched glass screen, which is flush with the bezel, is also part of it, and my left and right brain agreed that the squeeze bar and dot on the side of the Voyage are a much better way to get to the next and previous pages than tapping the screen itself ever was on the Paperwhite and Touch. "It's the highest contrast e-reader in the world," Dave Limp told us as he rattled off the Voyage's talking points. Quote, "It does literally feel like a piece of paper in how you read," he added. I didn't have a chance to actually read a page of text on the Voyage. There was a lot going on in that 2 hours, so I can't attest to this assertion from personal experience yet. But just looking at the display made it seem very plausible, even to the detail of making the display's micro-etching mimic the feel of paper, a slight matte finish compared with the smooth surface of a pane of regular glass. "I can assure you this device represents a significant leap forward in e-reader technology, most comparable in my view to the advance between the Kindle second generation and the Kindle keyboard 4 years ago." You have no doubt by now heard a lot about the page press feature of the Voyage. That's a return to physical motions that advance pages in the book. What I loved about how Dave Limp discussed this was his almost weary remembering of how strongly customers have weighed in on this specific characteristic of e-readers. Back when Kindles had buttons, the first problem, but back on the original Kindle, was that they were too easy to advance, and clumsy people like, I think, Robert Scoble, the tech blogger, was complaining that, you know, these buttons were terrible because they would click when he didn't mean them to click. Well, the buttons did get better with more precise movement on the Kindle 2 and 3. And this is my memory of history, not Limp's, by the way. This is just my recall of it. He did, however, recall that the buttons on the pre-touch screen Kindles made an audible click that customers said sometimes kept their bedmates awake when one wanted to sleep while the other one still had some reading to do. I'm sure the team hoped that they would never hear about loud buttons again when the touch technology made silent taps on the screen possible for page turns. But lo and behold, customers didn't like touching the screen so much, and I was one of them. I thought it kind of interrupted the flow of disappearing into the screen when you had to remember that it was a real screen every time you tapped to get to the next page. So back to buttons on the seventh generation, but what about those annoying clicks in the night? Et voila, here comes PagePress, a force sensor made of carbon and silver, which you squeeze on the bezel of the Voyage very slightly, just enough to invoke a pleasant micro-vibration on your thumb, a haptic confirmation that the Kindle got your message about a page turn and the page has been turned. Your thumb never has to leave the sensor, it just rests there until another little squeeze is needed. There's no click, and if you want to tap on the screen to advance the pages, you can still do that too. You can also customize all of this about the page press function, adjusting the pressure required, and you can turn off that haptic buzz if you don't like it. Andy Anatko in our small group asked if the acquisition of Comixology by Amazon has informed any of the improvements in the Kindle lineup, and Dave Limp said yes, specifically the panel view used to read graphic novels and comics is somehow better in the Voyage than on the Paperwhite. I'm not sure if that is a hardware advantage or if once the software is the same on the devices that it'll be, you know, the same on the Paperwhite as on the Voyage. All of these improvements would have been enough for me to know I wanted to upgrade to a Voyage, so the automatic adjustment of screen brightness, to me, was just kind of an extra. Sensors detect the light around you and adjust the screen's brightness. There was one pretty amazing level of detail in this, though, and that's that the automatic light adjustment is timed to gradually turn down the light at night as your eyes get used to the darkness. So you set it at a certain level, and then just over the passage of time, since they know your eyes are adjusting, you're going to see the light kind of get lower as you become more sensitive to it. That's pretty impressive. So let's pull back here to talk about the price of the Kindle Voyage. It's not cheap, $199 for Wi-Fi with special offers and $269 for Wi-Fi and free 3G coverage. Listener David Enzel forwarded a link to me that had an excellent post I thought about which Kindle to buy in the current lineup. It's by Kansas City blogger and podcaster Sean Blanc, whose website is seanblanc.net. That's S H-A-W-N-B-L-A-N-C, Blanc as in white in French. He wrote on September 18th, "The Voyage is the flagship Kindle for a reason. It has refined and improved on all the, quote, shortcomings of the Paperwhite." He recommends the Voyage unless the price is more than you want to spend, in which case you can get the Paperwhite for $119 Wi-Fi only with special offers. I agree, and I also agree that there isn't a huge need usually to spend more for the 3G Kindle these days. If you're traveling away from Wi-Fi, you can sync your Kindle before you go, and you can create a hotspot on your smartphone if you've got that capability. That's what I did while I was sitting at the gate with my Fire Phone in Denver Wednesday night trying to upload all of the information at the time the embargo came off. And you can update your Kindle the same way with one of those hotspots by simulating a Wi-Fi that it can jump on. That said, I did order a 3G version of the Voyage because to me it is sometimes worth it not to have to remember to sync before I go on a trip or to set up a hotspot. Software improvements on the Voyage will also arrive on the Paperwhite. It's not clear exactly when. They'll be sort of rolled out over several months, I suppose. I think they're worth mentioning, these software changes, as evidence that the device team at Amazon is unrelenting in pursuing innovations in reading. One of them is deeper Goodreads integration. That, I think that makes sense. You can add a book directly to your Goodreads shelf now. And in answer to a question I asked, another member of the team stated that you can update your percentage completion of a book directly from the Kindle. And that's something I've been wanting to see, because I get a sort of a useless satisfaction of adjusting the completion bar, what percent I've read of a book that I'm reading on Goodreads. Kind of keeps my feet to the fire. X-Ray gets some improvements in the new software, including the addition of a notable clips section or tab in the book, and that uses algorithms and popular highlights with a little bit of human curation to give you a way to review the key passages in a book. That's pretty amazing. A new learning tool arrives in the new operating system. This follows Vocabulary Builder, which we already have in current devices. This one is called WordWise, and it places above complex words right in the text, kind of in an interline between the text, a simple definition to help students get a quick boost in understanding. The algorithm chooses its simple definition based on the context of the word in the passage, if you can believe that. And you can also adjust the WordWise setting to turn it off or to lower the level so fewer words show up with the aids. The Paperwhite is the best-selling Kindle and remains in the lineup with these two new devices and with the software available in the next few months. As reported earlier, the storage in the Paperwhite has kind of quietly been doubled to 4 gigabytes. Rounding out the Kindle reader lineup is a brand new entry-level Kindle at $79. A big improvement is that it will have a touch screen instead of that five-way controller where you had to select letters one at a time to enter text. That was kind of a pain in the neck, I thought. The basic Kindle will now also have Goodreads, X-Ray, and the other software capabilities of the Paperwhite and the Voyage. The $79 Kindle, like the existing basic Kindle, does not have a built-in light, and the screen resolution is lower than the Paperwhite, 167 ppi compared with 212 ppi. With the Voyage resolution at 300 ppi, you really can see there's a nice range of options in screen resolution among these three readers with appropriate differences in price. One thing we didn't see in New York this week was a color-dedicated e-reader display. Limp said Amazon feels this technology is still not ready for prime time, despite Amazon's acquisition of LiquiVista, which led some people to expect faster development of a color-reflective screen for Kindle. To sum up the Kindle portion of the briefing, I want to quote Dave Limp's comment as he finished his presentation. He said, "The Kindle team that's building readers at Amazon, they are missionaries, and they will not be done until they get better than that piece of paper. It has infinite battery life, it's foldable, it does color very well, it's a pretty good medium. Gutenberg had a lot of things right, so color is part of that. We believe across an arc of time, that may be years or decades, who knows, that reflective high battery life color will happen here." Referring to the LiquiVista acquisition a little over a year ago, Limp said, "We believed so much in color that we bought a display company." I asked Dave Limp about the availability of the new Kindle readers outside the U.S. He said they will be rolled out worldwide over the next 2 months. Before we continue our progression to the stations where we saw the various products, I'm going to turn to the interview that I did toward the end of this whole session with Dave Limp. And I had by that time seen the new low-end Fire tablets, which surprised me by not having Mayday. So you'll hear me ask Dave Limp about that. We just met at the side of the room. I think we were standing up kind of off to a corner. And I began by asking him to set the entire day's product announcements in a couple of themes.
I think the two things that are overarching about all the products we're launching today and what we've done throughout the year is, first of all, that on the device business inside of Amazon, we're innovating on a pace that's unprecedented, certainly for us, on behalf of customers. And you see it both in the high-end products like HDX and Voyage in terms of the materials we're using, the quality of the screens we have, the speed of the processors. But you also see it in the entry-level products we have. It's being able to pack that much horsepower into a price point that's other people just can't get to, so that we can get more interesting products to more people at affordable prices. So that'd be the first thing. And I think the second thing is that, you know, we take a different approach to our device business. It's not just fire and forget. We don't sell a customer a device and say, we're not going to care about it anymore. For us, it's about the experience the day you open the box, and then for the next number of years that you're using the device. As I said earlier, if a device from Amazon ends up in a drawer, for us, that's a failure. We want people to use these, and the vast majority of people do. And we think that's because we sweat the details on the services side of this, the cloud integration, the content ecosystem, making them open platforms. And if I was going to walk away with two key themes, it would be that innovation and the fact that we build these services that customers love and use.
Well, I would think it would have been a hard decision not to put Mayday on the HD 6 and 7, because sort of an entry-level device, I could picture people trying a tablet that really did need the help. And was it just because that's turned out to be a pretty expensive thing to offer, and it conflicted with the desire to make it an affordable price?
We did sweat the details on that decision. That was one we spent a lot of time in the room debating. And the real question is, do you try to strive for that lower price and to give access to more, knowing full well that on the lower price device without Mayday, you can still call Amazon customer service, you can still put your phone number in there and somebody's going to call you right back, versus putting it in and having to pass along a slightly higher cost to customers. And it was a close one. You know, there was people on both sides, but we opted for the lower price. And we'll see what customers say, but I think it'll likely be the right decision.
What about the possibility on a device like that of saying you can buy it for $99 if you want it with Mayday, sort of like, do you want special offers or do you not want special offers? You'll pay another $29 or something like that.
It's actually a good idea. We hadn't spent a lot of time contemplating that, but I'll take that back to the team. It's actually a good idea. Yeah.
Now, are you involved on the phone? I bought a phone. I think I'm one of the 35,000 people that bought the phone. I love it.
Well, thank you for buying a phone. Yes, I do. I do have responsibility for the phone business as well.
Well, now, to me, Mayday on the phone is really sort of the killer app that I think people are overlooking when they kind of dismiss the phone and say, Amazon can have a couple of failures a year and still do great. But there's nothing else like that on a phone where you can just tap it and have the person controlling your phone and all of that. I mean, why isn't that a bigger deal?
Well, first of all, I'm not ready to call it a failure by any means. We try to start these things, and sometimes we're misunderstood for long periods of time. And I think the phone will continue to innovate there as well. I agree with you, by the way. I have lots of people that have contacted us about the Mayday feature alone. Let alone Firefly and some of the other innovations that we have on the phone, and said, you know, it has saved the day. And so, one of the core tenets of Amazon is just to have world-class customer service. And I think it's a sad testament to the sort of industries we're in, but I think that's becoming a little bit of a lost art. And if we can set the bar higher and other people imitate, I think that's just good for everybody. But I agree with you on the Mayday feature.
Now, the other thing that's paining me, I've had an iPhone for years, and I've got the Fire Phone. I untethered from my iPhone and the whole thing, but now I see this watch coming, and then I see the Moto 360, and neither one of those will work with my Fire Phone. On kind of a larger look at how the industry operates, it seems like if you aren't at parity with the latest and greatest new thing, it tugs your customers away from the device, even if they love it, if they're not going to be able to connect it to the watch or Google Glass or whatever the next great thing is going to be.
Yeah, it's always hard to predict what the next great thing is going to be. I think Apple has chosen to tether directly only to their phone. I think that to the extent that other wearables are open, we should be able to integrate with them. So, you know, we're adding Bluetooth LE to this version of Fire OS. And that'll give us access to a lot of the fitness wearables, for example, that do support the open standards, and they have an Android application. I don't know enough about the Moto watch yet to know whether or not we can integrate, but if it becomes popular, we'll make sure we integrate with these. I think the Apple ecosystem tends to be a little more closed, maybe a lot more closed depending on your view. And it's going to be hard to integrate with that. Our philosophy is very different, which is we want to make our apps available everywhere, not only on our own device business, but if you choose to be in a different ecosystem, we'll give you a Kindle app, we'll give you a Vindio app, we're going to give you a music app, because that's the right thing, we think, to do by customers.
I was thrilled to see The Voyage, and I mean, I was pretty blown away by it. I think he did such a great job of that. I put my Paperwhite next to it, and the screen is just more visible, and the thinness. And
I'll pass that on to the team. They will be delighted to hear that.
Well, and the thing that I'm impressed with, and I think you said this earlier, if you just looked at the market for the dedicated e-reader versus the tablets, I could imagine a cold sort of business MBA approach would be, yeah, we're going to keep making e-readers better, but the tablets are where the numbers are. I almost get the feeling that Amazon is dedicated to the dedicated e-reader almost out of the love of it, that this is, books are basic to the company, and it's not, there's a little bit of an X factor that leads you to really do surprising things for this platform that is fading a little bit as the tablets rise.
Well, the good news is right now we don't necessarily have to make that choice, but I do agree with you. If we did have to make the choice, the Kindle team, the reader team, they're missionaries. They do want to improve reading. They believe in a dedicated reader. But the side thing is that around the world, that we're selling a large amount of readers, and there are places in the world where it is just at the beginning of its growth curve. You know, we live in a global economy, and you can't just look at one slice of the world and say, well, that's the trend. And so we have a great roadmap, as you've seen today, for readers. We think it's super important to our customers, and, you know, we're willing to, again, stick things out for a very long time, and I think you'll see us do that on the readers.
Glad to hear. Thanks a lot, Dave.
All right, thanks.
So we got up from our couches in the little circle to see the new readers, and Beatrice took the green group to see John Oakes, a young man, director of product development for Kindle. He met with us at a high table that had new Fire HDX 8.9-inch tablets on it. These are expensive and impressive, with specs meant to rival the iPad and the best tablets from any manufacturer. The HDX 8.9 is impressively thin. It's a third of an inch thick. That's the same as the iPad Air, but it weighs only 375 grams. That's 20% lighter than the iPad Air. The 32-gigabyte Wi-Fi-only model with special offers, the one that I ordered, costs $429. The all-new, very thin and light Bluetooth keyboard that Amazon built for it costs another $60, and the origami case is another $70. So all in, the HDX 8.9 is in an average configuration with accessories will cost you $559. Now that's a lot more than a $99 Fire HD 6, which was also introduced this week, or the $79 basic Kindle, but it's also a lot less than a comparably configured iPad. In fact, just a 32-gigabyte iPad Air with Wi-Fi costs $40 more than the HDX 8.9-inch plus keyboard and case. The HDX 8.9 seemed fast and furious in its speed, playing movies and games during the demo. It's the first tablet with a 2.5 gigahertz Snapdragon 805 processor, which I will confess I like to say, but I don't really have much of a handle on why the innards of the new tablet are impressive because of it. But I was watching the guy from PC World in our group, and he was nodding his head in appreciation. So it sounded like that Snapdragon 805 processor is, in fact, something that distinguishes the new tablet from Amazon. The Wi-Fi is also updated in this tablet, runs four times faster than last year's model. Its maximum peak download rate is 600 megabytes per second. Now, in Cambridge, I don't often see more than 50 megabytes per second, so when I do my speed tests on the Comcast connection, 600 looks like it would cover my needs for a long time. The LCD screen on the HDX 8.9-inch really was sparkling. It boasts a million more pixels than the iPad Air and a resolution of 339 pixels per inch. The audio is crazy using something called Dolby Atmos, which is available in some theaters across the country. Apparently, there'll be in more next year. We put on headphones to listen to what this was like, and you just had the feeling that you were totally in the middle of the sound and stuff was happening over my head. It was pretty amazing. Moving on to the next station, this is kind of a big room, high ceilings, concrete floors, and so we're sort of moving from space to space in it as the other groups are moving as well. And so we're still talking about the HTX 8.9 inch, but now they've got a display on a separate table that has a piece of paper on it and an iPad and an HTX 8.9. I posted a video of this at thekindlechronicles.com so you can see this dynamic light control sensor's ability to take light information from the room to adjust the background of the text. The demo that they had set up in New York was made to do this adjustment over 5 or 6 seconds, but in real world the change would be more gradual, Oak said. I liked that they designed this walkthrough to include a specific example of the HTX's book reading powers, and I'll be very curious to try this one in my own home. I really liked the Bluetooth keyboard that they created for this tablet. It's got a keypad as well as keys, and it's a custom keyboard. It actually has a key that you can press to has the shopping basket to go directly to Amazon store, naturally, and it settles in with the HTX in the origami cover with a nice magnetic closure. The reason I ordered an HTX 8.9 is that I'd like to experiment with it as a traveling computing platform. You can handle Word documents on it, and they're beefing this thing up so that you can actually maybe use it as you would a Microsoft Surface or maybe even your laptop, and I'm just going to be curious to see if that's really possible. If I put together the HTX and the cover and the keyboard, that will trim a whole pound of weight from what I travel with for computing. So if there was a way to mimic what I can do with my laptop with just using that, that'd be very interesting to me. Now, I certainly wouldn't be able to put a podcast together using an HTX and a keyboard, so there'll be a lot of times when I'm obviously going to be traveling with the laptop. But I like to take on a challenge like this just to, as a way to try out the new technology. And I think they're building something into the HTX that actually enables you to use Excel and Word. And there's also some pretty powerful ways to store documents up in the Amazon Cloud Drive, which I'm using quite a bit, and now they're adding free photo storage from these tablet devices, which I already have on the Fire. And I'm getting drawn into this platform. This is the way everybody's trying to do it, Google and Apple and everybody. And the fact that they've made this tablet so apparently technologically advanced, it makes me want to just give it a try to see what I might do with it. And anytime I can trim a pound from what I'm carrying around with me, that's very appealing to me. After leaving the HTX tables, where John Oakes had told us all the exciting things about that high-end product, we went back to the corner of the room where Peter Larson was talking about a different challenge, and that's how good can you make a tablet that sells for $99, which is the starting price for the new Fire HD 6-inch. There's also a 7-inch version. They come in five colorful colors, and they're pretty rugged, it looks like. They do a lot of things which tablets priced at similar levels, according to Amazon, can't do. And in particular, the reliability was a big aspect of the challenge that they faced based on what they'd heard from customers buying non-Amazon tablets at Amazon.com. So Peter gave a good demonstration. He had some sort of torture equipment where they'd put these tablets in like a bin, and it would roll around as if it was a purse or a knapsack and simulate 4 years of bouncing around in this tumbler. And then there was another thing they called the rack where they're bending them around. So they're highlighting the fact that they were taking the reliability issues seriously because that's what they had heard from their customers. The final step was a room that was designed kind of like a kid's room. There was a stuffed giraffe there, and this was about the Fire Kids Edition, Fire HD Kids Edition, also in 6 and 7 inch. It features an amazing guarantee that is included where if anything happens to this Kindle Fire that a child is using, for 2 years, Amazon just replaces it with either a new or refurbished unit. And it comes with a very durable looking cover that would bounce around if it was dropped, and also some of the Free Time Unlimited, is there's a year of that. This is a package of features which looks like a fair amount of thought went into to attract people to the Fire HD as a tool for kids, both for fun and for education. And I pass this along to my daughter, Sarah, who's been on the show in the past. She has a son, James, 8. And I'll be curious to see if she picks up on this, if the features of the assurance that if something happens to it, it can be replaced, and then also some of the content options that come with it. She's a teacher in the Cambridge Public School, so she'll be looking at all of that with a careful eye. It looked quite appealing, and from some of the coverage that I've seen after the event, it looks like a lot of people see this Kindle version, this kids version of the Fire HD as having some real promise. So let's finish up with the last interview, and then I'll have some concluding thoughts and a comment.
Hey Len, my name is Peter Larson. I'm the Vice President of Products for Amazon Devices.
And you are here for the Fire TV launch, right?
I was indeed.
You know the space.
I do. We're the fun thing about working at Amazon Devices is that we have a ton of products coming out of our pipeline. As you can see here, we're announcing 6 new products today.
Now, I was interested that the HD 6 and 7 won't have May Day, and I was wondering, that had to be a hard decision, because for an inexpensive product, I can picture people that need help. Why did you not have May Day on those products?
Well, I tell you, we do have it on the HDX, and for customers who want customer support on our lower-cost tablets, you can still get best-in-class phone support, best-in-class email support, and in fact, on these tablets, it's very easy to enter in your phone number, and we'll call you back in a minute or two. So you still get really good support on these lower-cost tablets. May Day costs a lot of money to support, so we'd like to give our customers options. You can have the best product, or you can have a low-cost product.
Now, is there a 7-inch comparable to the 8.9-inch, an HDX 7-inch?
There is an HDX 7-inch, and we're reducing the price from $229 to $199 today.
Okay, so that's the existing HDX 7-inch.
One, we haven't upgraded that one for this year. It's still actually among, if not the highest performance, best display tablet in its category. We're simply carving the price down.
I see. Now, the HD 6 and 7 come with an 8-gigabyte model, the low end.
Yeah.
I remember when Jeff Bezos, I think it was in Santa Monica, announcing the Fire and saying an 8-gigabyte a tablet is a non-starter because of all the stuff that people watch. What's the thinking to go back down to what he said was just too small to even be considered?
Listen, customers love low prices, and we've got great cloud storage available. So all the content you buy from Amazon is stored for you for free up in the cloud. And this year, with our front and rear facing cameras, we're announcing that all the photos you take are saved for free, unlimited, up in the cloud.
Now, and that's true of all these devices you're announcing today, except the Paperwhite and the E-Ink.
Yes, it is.
The family library fascinates me because my wife and I very seldom read the same books, but once in a while I've got a book and say, gee, I wish you could read that.
Likewise.
How did that come about? That's almost one of the most radical changes you've announced here today.
I tell you, we hear from customers about this all the time. They're like, I'm sitting next to my husband, and I can't share Prime Instant Video. You're driving me crazy. So we just work from the customer backwards, as we always do. We said, all right, how do we start with a clean sheet of paper and make sharing books, apps, games, and Prime Instant Video as easy as pie? And we've done that with Family Library.
Now, if I'm watching a show and then I share it with my wife, can we both be watching it at the same time, starting in different places?
Yes.
So it's really just sort of a separate profile that gets set up for either of us.
Yes, it is.
The publishers limit the number of devices a book can be on, I know.
Yeah.
So this will just count as one of those six.
That's right.
And your wife could have two of them on two of her devices. You could have the remaining four on yours.
That's right.
It's a little bit overwhelming, all these things. Your personal involvement in it, is there one part that you hope really gets noticed and doesn't get overlooked in all the...
Well, I tell you, there are... I mean, it's very hard. It's like Sophie's Choice for me. I've been deeply involved in all these products. I can tell you the Kindle Voyage is the most advanced e-reader we've ever done. And features such as WordWise really get me going. I really get excited when we help people learn how to read English, help kids learn how to read English. I think that's an awesome feature. I'm also super excited by the amount of innovation it takes to pack all of these features, all of these high-end features, in these low price points. Beautiful colors, 6-inch, 7-inch, we think our customers are going to have a ton of fun. And then on top of that, you've got our Kindle keyboard, or our Fire keyboard. That's the thinnest and lightest full-featured keyboard that's been made available. I use it all the time at home. I love it. And then I just wrap it up with the Kids Edition. I've got a 7-year-old. She uses Free Time. We've done it all for parents. We've got a real tablet. It's not a toy. We've got all the content, over 5,000 titles. And we've got this unprecedented 2-year worry-free guarantee. Nobody's doing this sort of thing.
The WordWise, will it be available on roughly the same books that have X-ray, or is it sort of a different rollout and making it available on your content?
It's a different rollout, but certainly our goal is to have WordWise available on as many books as we can.
And can you put it on a book without getting the approval of the publisher, or is somehow the publisher involved in whether or not that's on there?
I don't know why a publisher would object.
But it's just something you can do. I think X-ray... You can just do it within your own side of the thing.
You know, these features are good for customers, good for readers, and we're aligned with publishers. We want to have great reading experiences for our customers.
Great. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you.
After the small group presentations, I did have a chance to do those two interviews and then also put up a couple of videos, which you can find at thekindlechronicles.com. I ended up leaving the Milk Studios about a half hour later than I expected, but there was still time for Uber to get me to LaGuardia in time for my flight to Denver. And I spent the whole 4 hours on the flight writing a couple of blog posts. And then I knew that 9 o'clock was the witching hour when the embargo was going to be lifted on all of this great content. And I really wanted to have the information at thekindlechronicles.com show up when everybody else was releasing their reports. So as the plane was landing, it was approaching 7 o'clock Denver time, 9 p.m. Boston time. And I will confess that I fired up my Fire phone even before the wheels touched down. And sure enough, there was a signal. And so I was able to create a hotspot and start uploading the material that I'd written in Word to the WordPress website so that I was able to be ready to hit published right at the moment. I was surprised because at 9 p.m. sharp, by that time we were on the ground taxiing, I didn't see the new products at Amazon.com. So I thought, gee, maybe there's been a glitch. And I was so tired at that point, I asked somebody, what time is it? Is it 7 o'clock here, 9 o'clock in Boston? But it did show up about 3 minutes after the hour, and that's when I hit publish on my post, and then I sent out a MailChimp alert to the those of you who are receiving that free newsletter. Now, I'll make a pitch for the free newsletter because I heard from a couple of you that that was where you first heard about these new products. And in one case, it looked like by ordering right away, the delivery was October 21st, but people who had ordered a couple of hours later on the voyage, the deliveries are into November. So every once in a while, if you're on that free Kindle Chronicles email list, my goal is I love nothing better than to be able to get you information in a timely way that can be useful to you. So that's what I was doing on the plane. By the time I looked up after all of this flurry of work around the lifting of the embargo, I was the only person left on the plane, and Frontier stewardess came by, and well, she was grinning. She thought it was pretty funny, and she said, you don't have to go home, but you do have to get off the plane. And at that point, I packed up and finished up the rest of it in the at the gate area. All in all, a great experience to have a chance to see these new products and to get this information to you in a way that I hope has been entertaining and useful. I hope I'll have a chance to look at one or two review copies of the Voyage and possibly the HDX 8.9 to talk to you about in coming weeks before they ship. And next week's guest is going to be Joshua Talent, an ebook expert who founded eBook Architects. This is Len Edgerly for the Kindle Chronicles in downtown Denver. I really appreciate your listening to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.